This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dream.
Let's go to another piece of this case. Some people want to call this a tragic mistake by a kid who is in over his head. David Burke, he was 21. His fans point out he was barely an adult when all this allegedly started, but prosecutors didn't charge a scared kid. They charged a first-degree murder with special circumstances, lying in wait, financial motive, murdering a witness, a continuous S-acts. Mutilation of remains, and then there's the music. Romantic homicide. What a fitting track for a person with these accusations against him. An unreleased track reportedly naming Celeste, a video with a dark-haired girl in blood and someone going into a trunk dead, and an album called Withered. So which is it? A young man who panicked or someone who the art was warning us about? Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author with us today, as always, and also Robin Dreek, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Let's start with the music. Romantic homicide. And this is released years before all this happened. And it wasn't like it happened, then he wrote the song. So is this him predicting the future? Is this someone who is so deep into the macabre lyrics and his macabre image that somehow this ended up manifesting itself in a really, really sick way? At what point does dark art stop being expression and start being someone telling you who they really are? How much do you think of his art actually played a part in these accusations?
It alarms me. And I know that, you know, music particularly listened to by adolescents can have a dark tinge to it, sometimes very much so. And often it's just they're expressing emotions, difficult emotions. But when somebody is creating this kind of material, it sets off my red flags. I mean, it just... you know, it alarms me, and particularly the prescient nature of it. Again, who can think of lyrics like I wrote some of the lyrics down in the back of my mind, I killed you and I don't even regret it. I can't believe I said it, but it's true. I hate you. That sounds a little bit like leakage to me.
The thing is, he wrote it before any of this happened.
Right. But it shows that there's a fantasy life.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's the thing, is because so many awful things happen years after somebody has been thinking about it, you know? And we see that so much with, like, Columbine killers and school shooters writing morbid stories about murdering people years before they picked up the gun and did it.
Yeah.
And looking back with a clinical eye, you can say, you know, somebody should have tagged this as something to ask a few more questions about or look at very closely. If I had a kid saying that stuff, I would be looking at it. You know,
yeah.
I would say we're going to go talk to a counselor about this, because this just makes me very uneasy.
I mean, the fantasy angle on this is so profound. I mean, just think about this. Even when our kids are in elementary school and they go to kindergarten for the first time and the teacher asks them to draw a picture of your home, things that come back a little different, a little deviant, they get calls to home, say, what's going on here? You know,
right.
There's a lot of wellness checks that happen when kids start articulating through art what their home life is like, what life is like, because again, it's not past as prologue, but at the same time though, that's sort of the first indicators coming out like this. And as we're discussing, it's talking about that fantasy aspect of this, it really reminds me of what serial killers do too. I mean, it's about
very
that fantasization. You combine that kind of sick fantasization in an escalation towards not being enough just to think about it, not just enough to write about it. They have to actually act on it. And then when you combine that with high level psychopathy, oh my God, it's a recipe for really bad things happening.
Yeah. And the Sandy Hook killer in third grade created a little book about murder. And actually, in the book, the child killed his mother, which is ultimately what ended up happening. Nobody tagged it. In fact, I think the school had it printed off because the kids were all writing little books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they copied it and made a little binder. And here was his little book. And it was filled with death and killing and even killing mother, which is ultimately what he ended up doing. That was where his brain was at third grade. So I tend to take those things seriously. Absolutely. Someone wrote a clinical book. This has been about 20 years ago. I don't recall the name of it, but she was writing about trauma and this exact topic and how it shows up in art and the way it leaks out. Yes. And she did a little mini analysis of Stephen King and what she was speculating his childhood had been like and the kind of trauma that he must have lived through in order to create the dark stories, you know, that he created and that this stuff does live in our head. So
great analogy. Yeah. And it made me think, I got to make sure I use my daughter's other mug. I got a mug that we made from her art in kindergarten. It's so sweet. It's safe. It's flowers. It's nice. Yeah. So anyway, thank God, right?
Yeah.
And what is she now? She's a nurse.
Yeah.
You guys don't want to see the books I wrote in elementary school. They weren't quite that dark, but they were dark. I will say, but it wasn't like, oh, let's. I think it wasn't about killing anybody. I don't think there might have been a murder or two in there.
Oh my
but it was more from what, like, I grew up watching Rescue 911, Unsolved Mysteries in 2020. You know, these are the things that I was more interested in than watching reruns of Full House.
Tony, it's part of your life arc. I know we're digressing here, but then what do you do now in the world of radio that you fell in love with at 14 when Todd hired you?
Yeah.
Is you do ghost stories, you do true crime, which is it's your outlet for all those things.
It ended up making a career out of the shit I wrote books about in third grade. I really literally, because I have like some ghost ones I wrote about haunted bunk beds and things of that nature based on unsolved mysteries. I still have them. And it's kind of funny because, the things I pretended to do as a child, I do in real life now. Like I've monetized them. I found ways to make it.
It's healthy.
It's amazing that you can even do that these days. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I never thought like I'm going to make a living doing this stuff. Let's talk for a second about some of them. I mean, those lyrics, song lyrics are typically things people relate to, things, you know, you sing along with because it's meaningful to you in your life. I mean, when you're jamming out to those lyrics, like you said, they're like, in the back of my mind, I killed you and I didn't even regret it. I can't believe I said it, but it's true. I hate you. Mm-hmm. That's a red flag, I think, really to anybody who's jamming out to that to a certain extent. I mean, there's all sorts of music, but I mean, that's dark. That's really dark. And that's not just your typical I'm angry song. That's like calculated killer type lyrics.
Yeah, very much. Very much. And we're all influenced by the media we consume. It may be under conscious awareness. But I mean, if we've all been inspired by a piece of music, by a play, by a film that makes us feel good, you know, we integrate good values, we become better people. Well, it goes the other direction too.
Yeah.
So I'm cautious.
It's also, you know, when you think about the circle and the entourage that was part of this with him, because the stats and averages and is saying this is, you couldn't dismember a body solo in most of these cases. And so when you think about the cover he might have been getting, or at least supported by, when you're actually creating content like that, who does it attract? Mm-hmm. People of like mind, you know, they very flock good to like ideas. And so when you get caught up in the culture of, hey, we're all thinking the same, we must be right, and you have that personal confirmation bias coming from your sycophants that you're surrounded by because you're all believing in the same stuff that you're spewing out, it is a continued escalation into disaster.
Yeah.
How much of his music do you think is going to end up on trial here? Where, I mean, I'm looking at some of it here. I mean, what do you think is going to make it into court? There's also the leaked unreleased song that allegedly is from him called Celeste. I mean, this doesn't necessarily go into the murder end of things, but there are SA charges here that are going on. Some of the lyrics, "Oh Celeste, my girl with my name tattooed on her chest, smell her on my clothes like cigarettes, I hear her voice each time I take a breath, I'm obsessed, afraid you'll only love me when undressed." There you go. That's going to get, that's not going to be looked forward or looked favorably in front of a jury. "But you look so damn gorgeous in that dress, missing you so much makes me depressed." Well, there we go. That kind of seems to establish that there's quite a relationship going on there. In a Rehab music video, he references bloody sandals, bodies stacked on top of another, you know, like you do in a good pop hit. Remember all those Backstreet Boys about the bodies being stacked. And then you got other scattered lines and tracks, Poison, Bleed Out, Drink and Drive. I mean, it's like, all you got to do is look at his track listing to get an idea of what the hell's going on up in that head, it seems. I mean, how
can you be convicted on art? I think
can you be convicted on art? Do you think that these things? I mean, granted, they are art. Some of these things were written before this happened. Some appear to might possibly have been after. How do you think if those things make it into a courtroom, a jury's gonna relate to it?
It would be my guess that would really influence the jury. And I don't know enough about how judges make their decisions sure. on what they allow in and what they don't.
Let's just say it gets in, just for the sake of the argument. Yeah,
I have to say it would influence me, you know, just about again, what kind of fantasies does this person have and what does it mean about their character? Mm-hmm. And it's dark and creepy and relevant. I mean, I'm always the person that's in favor, not that anybody cares about my opinion about it, but let everything in. I mean, you know, if there's relevant evidence, let it in. But I understand that judges work within other parameters and therefore choose not to do that.
And it definitely seems to be one of those cases where life imitates art. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the congruence between the accusations and what the lyrics are is creepy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's like Taylor Swift. I mean, she writes about all her ex-boyfriends. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, a lot of things originated from true stories of her own lives. And I think if they can draw that parallel, I think it, again, that's why we've got to ask Bob Mata and Eric about this on the show, just kind of see as a lawyer what they think is going to be admissible or not admissible. What I would think, because there's such a close parallel. I mean, what's the difference between admitting this as opposed to admitting a text message? I mean, I'm curious about it too. Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors allege a specific financial motive as well, that Celeste's existence threatened Burke's career, basically insinuating that if she were to come out and say, hey, by the way, you're this much older than me and I'm a child and you're having this kind of relationship with me, that might not work out so well in the public eye. And it threatened that career. And that was the reason she was allegedly killed. When protecting a brand becomes more important than the actual child's life, is that something a person arrives at suddenly, Siobhan, or is there wiring that's already in place there, in your opinion?
Yeah, there's a lot of distorted thinking going on with that. And yeah, we can probably say that the wiring was off for David Burke. It's, again, hard to fathom mm-hmm. how you would value your brand and your celebrity and your money more than the life of another person. But mm-hmm. that is what a psychopath does. Machiavellianism. It's always about how can I use people, manipulate, and get ahead.
And how insecure are you that you think one teenager could undermine your entire brand? Or how bad do you think you actually are behind the scenes that they actually could? So it's either you're way overthinking what a 13-year-old or a teenager could do to your personal brand, unless you did really abhorrent things you know you shouldn't have done. So it's either one or the other. Either you're a complete idiot or a double down idiot for doing things that she could. See what I mean? It's just like you're in the wrong no matter what, big time.
Mm-hmm. And no one, I guess that's the other part of this whole thing, is there seems to be a lot of people that were in this orbit. I'm going to guess a lot of them got deals, and that's why we haven't seen any other arrests as of right now. That's more of a legal question, but I'm wondering if that's what's going on. And I do wonder, I mean, how likely do you think it is, Siobhan, and we kind of talked about this earlier, that everyone in the orbit of David had no idea that this girl was the age that she was. Was David the only one who knew her true age? Or do you think there's a world in which David didn't even know how old she was? To me, that's quite a stretch, but mm-hmm. I'm throwing it out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a stretch. I think anybody who was intimately involved with these two would have been able to tell that this girl was not over 18. I mean, she you know, she was an early adolescent. She looked early adolescent. She spoke like a young teenager from the bit of video that we've mm-hmm. seen of her. I think people were aware and just, you know, he was the man. He was the one that they were sucking up to, and nobody was going to criticize it.
No kidding, because I've been around people that were a lot of celebrity types, and the amount of care that them and their entire team put into who they allow close to them, who they allow to take photos with. I'm like, so when I was in the FBI years and years ago in New York City, we'd have the Goodwill games. And I remember, I'll never forget this, and I'm so sorry, this is a me moment, but it's the illustrated point.
We love them.
So Shaquille O'Neal, I met him because he came through the Waldorf Astoria, the Goodwill games are going on. And I remember he had his entourage and he loved FBI guys. And so we're there doing protection around him, for him. And I remember I'm standing with him, which is hilarious to begin with, right? And I remember a young woman came up and asked for his autograph. And he's very gracious, given an autograph. And then she said, can I take a photo? And he goes, no, I don't do photos with you. And I was like, and I looked at him after, I said, why not? And he goes, that's just danger waiting for a place. I mean, they were so careful about who to take photos with, who he allowed into that close circle to vet them for any potential like this. So making the point here, how blind was his entire entourage, parents, friends, sycophants, I don't care who it is, that they allowed someone this underage without questioning her? I mean, didn't even ask the question, so they had to have known, or they're completely blind. So that's why I keep going back to that culpability. Who in this entourage is culpable for all this? I think there's a lot. And to your point also earlier, Tony, we might not see other charges yet because maybe everyone flipped on them.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why there wouldn't be other charges by now if others are going to be charged, or if this is why, you know, you have a literal federal indictment against the guy. Like, I'm guessing it's pretty tight what they're bringing. At least I hope it is. I hope it's not another Diddy, you know.
Yeah, and to everyone's point in the comments as well, I don't think they're going to have to rely on song lyrics. I think it's going to be a small part of a big hole about what they have on him. I think there's going to be a lot of testimonials. I think there's going to be a lot of digital evidence because you got a lot of underage people on their texting, on their Google machines, you know, all these things. That thing is going to be a lot.
Yeah, I think the lyrics are icing on the cake at this point, quite honestly.
Besides a Tesla giving up all the details, I think that Tesla's got a lot to say.
The winner in this is Elon Musk, and your Tesla will tell on you. You should understand that when you buy one. Fascinating conversation, as always. Thank you guys for your questions and comments. Keep dropping them. We read them, and we'll try to get to them, too, in other videos on Substack and YouTube. Be sure to make your comments there. Siobhan Scott's latest book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Go and check it out. I highly recommend it. Also, Robin Drake's latest, It's Not All About Me, also available wherever books are sold. Go and check all of those out. All right. Until next time, for Todd, for Robin, for Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
Just bawling, crying, and he said, Coach, they killed him.
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming. Because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.